And in Mad Dog, Jim Cartwright set into a phone with a scrambler device to evade taps.
We let Chalene's crowd take Darn according to plan, and Harry Cohen is, no longer with us.
Good,
said Atlanta Hope.
The four are heading for Ingolstadt. Everything is go.
She hung up and dialed again at once, reaching Western Union.
I want a flat rate telegram, same words, 23 different addresses.
She said crisply.
The message is, insert the advertisement in tomorrow's newspapers. Signature, Atlanta Hope.
She then read off the 23 addresses, each located in a large city in the United States, each a regional headquarters of God's Lightning. The following day, April the 25th, the newspapers in those cities ran an obscure ad in the personals column. It said, in thanks to St. Jude for favors granted A.W. The plot accordingly thickened. And then I sat back and thought about Harry Cohen. Once I imagined I could make it with him. There was something so repulsive, so cruel, so wild and psychopathic there, but of course it hadn't worked. The same as every other man. Nothing.
Hit me!
I screamed.
Bite me! Hurt me! Do something!
He did everything. The most agreeable sadist in the world. But it was the same as if he had been the gentlest, most poetic English instructor at Antioch. Nothing, 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 nothing. The closest miss was that strange banker Drake from Boston. What a scene. I'd gotten into his office on Wall Street, seeking a contribution for God's Lightning. Old white-haired buzzard between 60 and 70, typical of our wealthier members, I thought. I started the usual spiel. Communism, sexism, smut. And all the time his eyes were bright and hard as a snake's. It finally hit me that he didn't believe a word of it, so I started to cut it off, and then he pulled out his checkbook and wrote and held it up so I could see it. $20,000. I didn't know what to say. I started something about how all true Americans would appreciate this great gesture and so on, and he said,
rubbish. You're not rich, but you're famous. I want to add you to my collection. Deal?
The coldest bastard I ever met. Even Harry Cohen was human by comparison. Yet his eyes were such a clear blue, I couldn't believe they could be so frightening. A real madman in a perfectly sane way. Not even a psychopath, but something they don't have a name for. And it clicked. The humiliation of whoredom and the predatory viciousness in his face, plus the 20 grand. I nodded. He took me into a private suite of his business office, and he touched one button. The lights dimmed. Another button. Down came a movie screen, a third button, and I was watching a pornographic movie. He didn't approach me, just watched. And I tried to get excited, wondering if the actress was really making it or just faking it. And then a second film began, four of them this time in permutations and combinations. He led me to the couch. Every time I opened my eyes, I could still see the film over his shoulder. And it was the same. As soon as he got his thing inside me, nothing, nothing, nothing. I kept looking at the actors, trying to feel or something. And then, as he came, he whispered in my ear,
Heute die Welt, morgens das Sonnensystem.
That was the only time I almost made it. Sheer terror that this maniac knew. Later I tried to find out about him, but nobody above me in the order would say a word, and those below me didn't know anything, but I finally found out he was very big in the syndicate, maybe the top, and that's how I figured out that the old rumour was true. The syndicate was run by the order, too, just like everything else. But that cold, sinister old man never said another word about it. I kept waiting while we dressed, when he gave me the check, when he escorted me to the door, and even his expression seemed to deny that he had said it, or knew what it meant. Then he opened the door for me, he put an arm on my shoulder, and spoke so his secretary could hear it.
May your work hasten the day when America returns to purity.
Even his eyes weren't mocking, and his voice sounded completely sincere. And yet he had read me to the core, knew I was faking, and guessed that terror alone could unlock my reflexes. Maybe he even knew that I had already tried physical sadism, and it hadn't worked. Out on Wall Street, in the crowd, I saw a man with a gas mask. They were still rare that year. I felt the whole world was moving faster than I could understand, and that the order wasn't telling me nearly as much as I needed to know. Brother Berghard, who's actually a politician in Chicago under his real name, once explained the law of fives to me in relation to the pyramid of power principle. Intellectually, I understand. It's the only way we can work, each group a separate vector, so that the most any infiltrator can learn is a small part of the design. Emotionally, though, it does get frightening at times. Do the five at the top really have the whole picture? I don't know. And I don't see how they can predict a man like Drake. Or guess what he's planning next? There's a paradox here, I know. I joined the Order seeking power. Now I'm more a tool, an object than ever before. If a man like Drake ever thought that, he might tear the whole show apart. Unless the five really do have the powers they claim, but are not gullible enough to believe that bull. Some of it's hypnotism and some is plain old stage magic, but none of it is really supernatural. Nobody has sold me on a fairy tale since my uncle got into me when I was 12 with his routine about stopping the bleeding. My parents had only told me the truth about menstruation in advance. Enough of that. There was work to be done. I hit the buzzer on my desk and my secretary, Mr. Mortimer, came in. As I'd guessed, it was past 9 o'clock, and he'd been out there in the reception area, straightening up and worrying about my mood for God knows how long, while I was daydreaming. I studied my memo pad while he waited apprehensively. Finally, I noticed him and said,
"Be seated."
He sank into the dictation chair, putting his head right under the point of the lightning bolt on the wall, an effect I always enjoyed, and opened his pad.
"Call Zev Hirsch in New York,"
I said, watching his pencil fly to keep up with my words.
"The Foot Fetishist Liberation Front is having a demonstration. Tell Bun to cream them. I won't be satisfied unless a dozen of the perverts are put in the hospital, and I don't care how many of our people get arrested doing it. The bail fund is available if they need it. If Zev has any objections, I'll talk to him, but otherwise you handle it. Then make up the standard number 2 press release where I deny any knowledge of illegal activities. By that chapter and promise, we will investigate and expel anybody guilty of mob action. Have that ready for release this afternoon. Then get me the latest sales figures on Telemachus Sneezed."
Another busy day at the national headquarters of God's Lightning was started. And Hagbard Chalin, feeding Mavis's report on George's sexual and other behaviour into fuck-up, came out with a coding of C1472B2317A, which caused him to laugh immoderately.
"What's so damn funny?"
Mavis asked.
"From out of the west come the thundering hooves of the great horse, Onan,"
Hagbard grinned.
"The lonely stranger rides again."
"What the hell does all that mean?"
"We've got 64,000 possible personality types,"
Hagbard explained.
"And I've only seen that reading once before. Guess who it was?"
"Not me,"
Mavis said quickly, beginning to color.
"No, not you."
Hagbard laughed again.
"It was Atlanta Hope."
Mavis was startled.
"That's impossible. She's frigid, for one thing."
"There are many kinds of frigidity. It fits, believe me. She joined Women's Liberation at the same age George joined Weatherman, and they both split after a few months. and you'd be surprised how similar their mothers were, or how the successful careers of their older brothers annoy them.
But George is a nice guy underneath it all.
Hank Marcellini knocked an ash off his long Italian cigar.
Everybody is a nice guy underneath it all,
he said.
What we become when the world is through messing us over is something else.
At Chateau Thierry, in 1918, Robert Putney Drake looked around at the dead bodies, knew he was the last man alive in the platoon, and heard the Germans start to advance. He felt the cold wetness on his thighs before he realized he was urinating in his pants. A shell exploded nearby, and he sobbed,
"Oh, God, please, Jesus, don't let them kill me. I'm afraid to die. Please, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus."
Mary Lou and Simon are eating breakfast in bed, still naked as Adam and Eve. Mary Lou spread jam on toast and asked,
"No, seriously, which part was hallucination and which part was real?"
Simon sipped at his coffee.
"Everything in life is a hallucination,"
he said simply.
"Everything in death, too,"
he added.
"The universe is just putting us on, handing us a line."